have a chance to ride out this Omicron wave without shutting down our country once again.
You have sat there too long for all the good you have done. In the name of God, go.
We need to recognise that Russia is now calling the shots here.
Mad in their sleaze with a divided party, a Prime Minister losing the support of his backbenchers and governing shambolically.
Hello, you're listening to Bloomberg Westminster, your daily guide to British politics. I'm Caroline Hepker. Now, coming up on today's programme, I'll be speaking to Dan Poulter, Conservative MP for Central Suffolk and North Ipswich, and also to the Scottish National Party MP, David Linden. So another week, another tense Prime Minister's questions for Boris Johnson. He is facing the Commons as the will they, won't they surrounding Sue Gray's report continues. It seems Tory MPs are holding fire on ousting their leader for now as Partygate gets investigated by the police. The criminal probe will take longer than the civil service report, perhaps providing some respite before the letters pour in. The Foreign Secretary Liz Truss has been doing the rounds. She tells Sky she backs Johnson.
The Prime Minister has appeared before Parliament. He has apologised for what has happened. He's admitted that mistakes were made, and I 100% support him.
But Truss also told the BBC of partying in Downing Street and the reports about it as being clearly concerning, and there needs to be a change in culture. Speaking of Truss, she and her US counterpart have also agreed to urge Russia to de-escalate tensions over Ukraine. And President Joe Biden saying that the United States could personally sanction Vladimir Putin if he orders an invasion of the country, something that Moscow has always said they would not do. Joining us now on today's top news stories, Dr. Dan Poulter, Conservative MP for Central Suffolk and North Ipswich, also a hospital doctor. Dan, good to have you on the programme today. It's a very, very serious moment for the Conservative Party. Is there not an argument that the government should have just told the truth about these gatherings and parties right from the start?
Well, as you said, I work on the front line of the NHS, and I have done throughout the pandemic, in addition to my role as being an MP. And I've seen people who've lost their lives from COVID who would otherwise be here today. So I'm just as dismayed as everyone else has been to see these stories emerging one after another about the conduct of people on Whitehall and indeed in 10 Downing Street. And as you mentioned, the Prime Minister's own conduct has been brought into question. So we now have a report by Sue Gray. We now also have a criminal inquiry by the Met Police. I'm expecting the Sue Gray report today. I hope that that is the case and it isn't delayed any further than that. And when that report comes out, I'll be able to take a view. But I think it's very unlikely that we're going to see the Prime Minister given a clean bill of health. From my perspective, if we see that the report indicates that he has deliberately misled Parliament, you know, he's been willfully engaged in breaching or breaking the COVID rules, or indeed if we see in the future criminal or police sanction being taken against him, my view would be that his position would be untenable.
OK, so it's a question of time in that case. Perhaps the Met investigation is extraordinary. It was a thunderclap across Westminster yesterday. A criminal probe possibly involving a sitting prime minister. If you're dismayed, what is your reading of the mood across the rest of your colleagues in the parliamentary party?
Undoubtedly, I would suspect that from the colleagues I've spoken to, their view mirrors that of many other people in the country. That we all believe in maintaining integrity and in public life. We also believe at a time when a lot of people have made sacrifices, that if you're setting the rules to do with conduct during the COVID pandemic, you need to follow them. You can't be a rule maker and a rule breaker. But there is a process now in place that's going to examine the claims and counterclaims during all of this. We know the end result of that very soon. Many of us may have already come to a conclusion about what we think that report's going to say. But let's wait for that for the next few hours and then take a view.
More than 85,000 fixed penalty notices were issued to people who broke COVID rules during the lockdowns and the long period since March 2020 in this pandemic. Fined up to £10,000 for breaking those rules. Should that be wiped out, reconsidered? Fighting those in court, even if you feel like it's been wrongly given to you, a fixed penalty notice, is extraordinarily difficult.
No, it is. And the general approach the police have taken has historically been to look at the offence. Very often, initially, the approach that would be taken would be to offer a warning or to move people on if they were congregating in a way that was against the rules, rather than immediately slapping down a penalty notice, unless there was a flagrant breach of the rules that appeared to be an open and shut case. So it could be that it might be an expensive time for some of those who are being now looked into in Whitehall and in Number 10.
Okay, an expensive time. But can the rest of the party avoid some big question marks around integrity? I mean, it's not just the Prime Minister, and it surely can't be Allegra Stratton alone who loses her job if all of this is proved, as you say. The integrity of the party is surely in doubt if there were so many parties involving so many individuals.
Well, I don't think it's... I mean, if you think the vast majority of the Conservative Party are not in high government office, the vast majority of cabinet ministers are not being called into their conduct's not being called into question here. What is being called into question, in fact, probably more so than political appointees, are the conduct of some very senior civil servants in Whitehall. So I think this is not an issue that is a Conservative Party issue. There will be people in the Labour Party or the Scottish Nationalists who we know have broken the rules. I think there was a case of a Scottish Nationalist MP, a case being brought against one in Scotland at the moment for apparently knowingly being infected with COVID and travelling. I think that's now being looked into by the courts. So it's not a party political issue. The broader issue, though, for me is, whilst we are mired in allegation after allegation, and you know a lot of these are not allegations, there's an admission that something has taken place, something has occurred, and there's an admission of fact that a party has taken place. It's very difficult for a government to focus on the big issues that affect people. You know, at the moment, getting through the rest of the COVID pandemic, making sure that the health and social care system can recover from the pandemic and catching up with that backlog of COVID, the backlog of non-COVID care, for example, cancer care, getting on with dealing with the cost of living challenges. But
that's going to be months before the government can really deal with that if there's a whole leadership contest. I mean, it's going to be at minimum 2 months to do that. England has dropped the Plan B measures today, including face masks, if we move on to COVID and the pandemic. As a doctor yourself, that must seem quite mad. I mean, it's pretty simple to wear a mask, and yet even that has gone. I mean, you know, you could argue that work from home can go as the numbers come down, but why get rid of something so basic as mask wearing?
Well, speaking personally, I would tend to agree with you. I don't see there is a problem with... would have been a problem with maintaining a very modest measure, which would be mask wearing on public transport or in crowded public spaces going forward for a few more weeks, because we still have quite a high level of Omicron. The counter to that and the view that the government's taken, and actually they probably had made the right calls. I would have been more cautious during this period of the Omicron variant, but the UK government's probably made the right calls to a large extent, has been to say that this due to the success of the vaccine rollout due to the high uptake of the vaccine in the UK and the fact that we have a level of herd immunity already, that the Omicron variant was less of a threat. And indeed, that has proven to be the case. Now, the doctor, I've seen the worst of this pandemic, in looking after people. So, I'm very relieved that has proven to be the case. But probably, a little bit of extra mask wearing for a bit longer while we've still got high numbers of cases probably would be a sensible measure. And it's now obviously people's choice to decide whether they want to do that or not, rather than being mandated.
Yeah, and aren't we thankful to you and all doctors in the UK for that work? Look, one last thought. Has the libertarian wing captured the Conservative Party, i.e. all freedom, no responsibility? Does that change if Johnson goes?
I'm a One Nation Conservative, so I believe in supporting personal liberty, but I also believe it's the balance to be struck between personal liberty and a sense of collective responsibility, or if you like, a social contract to other people who live we live in society with. My view is that if Boris Johnson were to fall under a Boris bike today, or if he were to be taken out by an avalanche of letters to the chairman of the 1922, the next leader, when that person emerges, needs to be somebody who is of the One Nation tendency, who can appeal and govern for the whole of the country. And that's not just for England. We have very important issues in terms of the union at the moment and the debate about the future of the United Kingdom as a whole. It's important that whoever a future leader or prime minister is has the ability to appeal and reflect that across all parts of the nation.
Now, for more on what's happening in the world of politics, we're joined by our very own Leanne Gerrans. Good morning, Leanne. Look, as we await the Sue Gray report, on the lighter side of things, there's been a lot of talk about this idea of the Prime Minister being ambushed by cake at his Downing Street birthday celebration. What is this particular bit of spin?
This is such a funny bit of spin, actually. And the comment by Tory MP Conor Burns really sparked all of this, Caroline. He said Johnson was ambushed with a birthday cake while working at Number 10. And this has sparked absolute ridicule online. So if you go on some of your social media feeds, I'm sure you've seen a little few of these memes pop up. The Northern Ireland minister was fiercely defending the Prime Minister, saying he was sitting, he was working at his cabinet desk. And what actually happened is he came back from visits when people, including his wife Carrie, came in with a Union Jack flag styled cake, which I guess is very fitting for the Prime Minister, and they were singing happy birthday to him. The point is, Conor Burns was saying that this was not a premeditated, organised party. It was a surprise just sprung on the Prime Minister, and he didn't really know what to do about it, and that's exactly why he was there. Nigella Lawson got involved in this. I don't know if you've seen some of her cooking shows. I have. I'm an awful baker, but anyway. And she was saying that ambush by cake, it just has to be the title of my next book, with Conor Burns replying, it's yours if you want it. Could I include my granny's Christmas cake recipe? Nigella quickly quipped back saying, this is too meta. Plus, you think it's a joke. That says it all. So the Partygate scandal is in somewhat getting out of proportion now. I think it's fair to say that. And social media is using it as a joke. And it's not, but, Caroline, we know there are serious implications when it comes to this.
Yeah, I mean, the joke belying quite a lot of fury up and down the nation, I suspect. We're also watching the outcome of the Met investigation. And just it's pretty extraordinary.
Yes, it is extraordinary indeed. And if police decide to interview Boris Johnson under caution, this will be the first time this would have happened to a prime minister. So this is kind of seismic, if you want to put it in that way. Firstly, we don't know how many events the police are actually looking into. There are reports it could be about 8 social gathering events. And they want to know if these have breached the COVID regulations. So what happens once these COVID regulations are breached or people are found guilty of breaking the law. Under the Coronavirus Act, breaches are classified as summary offences. This means they do not come with a prison sentence but are punishable by fines. So, Caroline, it's kind of like getting a speeding fine for breaking the rules that must be paid on time, or you could face being prosecuted and having to go to court. So it's a fine, essentially. You've got to pay it. And in some ways, it's very straightforward investigation for the Metropolitan Police, because Sue Gray's kind of done all the legwork and can hand over a lot of her details to the police force. However, once again, you know, we're going to see how this turns out and how damning the language is in Sue Gray's report and eventually in the Met Police's report.
Leanne, thank you so much for bringing us up to speed on today's news. Yes, and what we're waiting for and what the whole of Westminster is waiting for. Thanks so much for that. Now, one group of MPs who haven't been shy in their criticism of the Prime Minister is the Scottish National Party. The party is calling for also an emergency financial package to support struggling families, aside from the criticism of the PM. And Scots are heading back to the office as guidance urging people to work from home is actually being relaxed in Scotland. To unpack all of this, we're joined by David Linden, who is the SNP MP for Glasgow East. Look, firstly, let's start with your take on Boris Johnson. I mean, I suppose it's a question of how quickly you think he should go.
Well, I think he should go immediately. I happen to have the view that Boris Johnson is unfit for office and always has been unfit for office, Caroline. I find it rather bizarre that, you know, lying in the House of Commons is probably going to be his downfall, when in many respects he's had a litany of gaffes over his career, whether it's comparing Muslim women to lesser boxes, talking of the war-torn city of Sirte in Libya, saying that it could be the new Dubai if they just cleared the dead bodies away. And of course, unlawful actions, which it sounds like he's going to be subject to, these are no new things. Boris Johnson was found to have unlawfully shut down Parliament as some sort of tin-pot dictator during Brexit. So I don't happen to think that Downing Street parties are perhaps anything new. Boris Johnson has always been a charlatan, in my view. And the fact that he continues to rule over Scotland, okay, absolutely, well, no electoral mandate, is a shambles.
Well, that, OK, the charlatan, that is your word. But Boris Johnson, I mean, to some degree, he was voted in with voters understanding perhaps some of his past. He had been Mayor of London. And arguably, it's only a risk taker like him who could have come up with the vaccine. So in some ways, his legacy is going to be enormous.
No, his legacy will be someone who lied to the Queen, unlawfully shut down Parliament, told people to stay at home, protect the NHS and save lives, whilst he turned his own office into a frat house. And it was interesting listening to Leanne there talking about the fact that, you know, if the police find, as I suspect they probably will, that Boris Johnson has broken COVID rules, that he'll be subject to a fine. I think the question that most of us in Westminster will be asking is, will he be phoning Lord Brownlow and asking Lord Brownlow to pay for his fine as well as his £840 roll of wallpaper? This is a Prime Minister who has taken his eye off of the job. He is not focusing on the biggest issues of the day, that is the cost of living crisis and the incredibly concerning scenes that we see between Ukraine and Russia. This is a Prime Minister who's asleep at the wheel and not getting on with the day job.
So you want a package of measures to boost household incomes? I mean, we've just come out of one of the biggest such handouts, you know, support packages from the Treasury. What are you calling for? Is it realistic now?
Well, I think one of the things I'm immediately calling for is some sort of low-income energy payment to, to families. That could be perhaps identified by way of the council tax reduction mechanism. I understand what people say, that if you do a one-off reduction in VAT on energy bills, that would mean people like myself, for example, who are MPs on very handsome salaries, would also get that tax cut on their energy. So one thing that we could do is that emergency financial package that would target people on low incomes, because we know that the cost of living crisis is only going to get worse. Inflation is going to peak at somewhere around about 7% in April. And at the moment, the Treasury, as far as I can see, are doing nothing to bring forward a plan for the cost of living crisis. They talk about the plan for jobs very often, but so far as I can see, Caroline, the only plan for jobs that the Chancellor's got at the moment is waiting to move next door when Boris Johnson's ousted from Downing Street.
Do you think that the national insurance rise should go ahead?
No, I don't. I have major problems with the hike in national insurance. I think that it's far too kind of across the board. It would tackle very much those on the lowest incomes, younger earners as well. We've commissioned some analysis from the House of Commons Library, Caroline, which shows that if that NI hike was to go ahead, it would take away about 20% of the pay rise that a band 5 nurse in Scotland would get. So that national insurance hike is being branded in some sort of way as being a support mechanism for the NHS. But what it in fact will do is take away money from nurses who have quite rightly got a pay rise. I don't think that is the right way of doing things. I'd like to see us look, for example, more at measures targeted on income tax for higher earners than a across-the-board national insurance hike, which I think would be a deeply regressive move.
OK. Is there not a problem, though, here, in the sense that there is an asymmetry? Nations and regions, including Scotland, can criticise, can restrict, add sort of restrictions that are economic burdens, but they can't raise taxes. There's no conclusive proof that Scotland's COVID actions were actually better, had a better outcome than England's particularly. So what would you respond to that?
No, I'm not sure that that is actually the case. I think that if you go and you interrogate some of the data, I think that you'll see that Scotland has tried to take measures that are a bit more sensible in terms of the pandemic. I think, for example, that the UK was far too late to lock down. I mean, there were still days and weeks of flights coming in from Italy to the UK at the beginning of the pandemic. So, yes, there are things that, you know, Scotland can do in terms of its limited public health measures. But in reality, a lot of the big levers that we would have liked to have pulled during that pandemic, particularly the early days of the pandemic, were not within the gift of the Scottish Government. So, for example, if you're going to lock down the economy, then you've got to have a furlough scheme in place. You've got to have the ability to control your borders. In reality, we in Scotland did not have to do that. And as is often the case, Caroline, we were operating with one hand tied behind our back. So, there are a lot more things that I think we would like to have done during the pandemic, but I'm afraid we did not have the powers as a result of the broken union we're in and that very unhelpful constitutional situation we're in.
On the specifics of the most recent Omicron hit, did Scotland jump the gun then on measures there? England perhaps has been proven right in terms of a more relaxed approach, which has perhaps paid off economically. I mean, lots of criticism in Scotland about the rules on nightclubs being too harsh, etc.
Well, I think the important thing to see here, Caroline, is that the measure of success in terms of how you deal with Omicron, in my view, isn't just in terms of the economy, it's in terms of admissions to hospitals, it's in terms of mortality. I think far too often during the course of the pandemic, we've focused entirely on the economy. If locking down a bit earlier in Scotland and tightening up restrictions managed to kind of stop the NHS from Scotland falling over, or indeed it saved lives, then I think that was a risk worth taking.
No regrets about the Omicron measures in Scotland?
No, I don't have any regrets at all about the Omicron measures in Scotland. It's interesting, I mean, over the course of the last 18, 19 months, at the beginning of the pandemic, very few people in my immediate circle were hit with the coronavirus pandemic. But in the course of the last 6 weeks, my partner, my parents, my children, you know, everybody in my closest circle were hit with the Omicron variant. So I think it was right to take
contagious.
Those measures and to try and guard against what was a deeply concerning variant that sadly has taken life.
Bloomberg Westminster. Listen weekdays at noon on DAB Digital Radio in London.